I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from Dubai in the UAE. Well, while some consider Russia and China as winning this phase of World War III, it was arguably the war to end all wars, World War I, that comes to mind this week. NATO soldiers have been involved in violence just a few hundred miles from Sarajevo. Now NATO is to add hundreds of soldiers to its thousands in Kosovo, not even recognised as a country by the UN or BRICS countries. It was arguably illegally under the UN Charter recognised by NATO powers before the destruction of Europe's only constitutionally socialist state, Yugoslavia. Joining me now from New York City is the former president of the UN General Assembly, as well as former foreign minister of Serbia, Vuk Jeremic, now president of the People's Party in Serbia and the Center for International Relations and Sustainable Development. Thank you so much, Vuk, for coming on. The situation moving very fast, as I understand it, in northern Kosovo. Before we even get to the context, I better ask, what has been, in recent weeks, the scale of the violence by NATO-backed Albania militias, I suppose, in northern Kosovo?
Well, thank you, first and foremost, for having me on the show. It's a privilege to be here and have this conversation. Essentially, what has been happening in the last few weeks in Kosovo is that Europe's most oppressed ethnic group is actually
a lot of competition for that, arguably. A lot of competition for that.
Yep. well, in our part of the world, for sure. And I'm talking about Kosovo Serbs. Kosovo Serbs, who are basically the most endangered ethnic group in the region of the Balkans, if you will. So they're rising against a complete deprivation of their basic human rights. And what happened was that NATO troops were called in to calm them down, to push them away from the places where they were protesting, and it became pretty rough at a certain point.
Why and how are they oppressed? And of course, some people were asking, why did they reject the? It's difficult. I mean, we have to sort of get on to what Kosovo actually is, given I'm speaking to you from the UAE, but of course the Global South has very different ideas as to what Kosovo is. It was suddenly became a country in the 90s, but isn't a country to the UN. Albin Kurti called elections. Why did they boycott the elections if they're so oppressed? Why didn't they vote for someone they wanted? In local elections,
I really do think we need to take a few steps back and to basically say that Kosovo is not a state. It is unfortunately recognized as an independent country by a number of powerful Western capitals, I'd say. But the vast majority of world population and member states of the United Nations as well do not recognize Kosovo as a state. Serbia does not recognize Kosovo as a state for us.
Nor does Brazil, Russia, India, China.
Constitutional territory.
Nor does Brazil, Russia, India, China, or South Africa.
China, like three quarters of Africa, four fifths of Latin America, vast majority of Asian countries do not recognize.
So, sorry to interrupt again, but then who is this Albin Kurti person who says it is a completely independent state?
He's an extremist politician, Albanian ethnic politician. So extreme that even the biggest sponsors of Kosovo's independence and the supporters of Kosovo independence, led by the United States of America, are having issues with him and don't know how to deal with him. He is currently leading the so-called government of Kosovo. He's the so-called prime minister of Kosovo. But a guy who has, in the past year and a half, shown very, very openly and blatantly that he wouldn't have any of the Serbian demands, reasonable demands, balanced demands, met no matter what the cost is. Even if he loses the support of the United States, he wants to see Kosovo without Serbs. He wants to see Greater Albania being created by means of putting together uniting Albania and the so-called Kosovo into Greater Albania. And as a result of his mindless decision a few days ago to send police, Kosovo police force, to enter the buildings of the municipal authorities in the north of Kosovo, we are having these problems that we're discussing today.
Because he says he can put and install Albanians in that area as Veçan municipality, even though 3.4% of the vote they got. Arguably, that's because the Serbs there boycotted the vote, though, of course. So this is all happening, but Stoltenberg sends it, I mean, and wouldn't have done so without Washington's approval, no matter what we're hearing about the US Ambassador Jeffrey Hovenier saying, hey, Albin Kurti, don't overstep the mark here against Serbia. I should say WikiLeaks has exposed Albin Kurti as a person who was involved in activities that worried the State Department years ago. WikiLeaks, the persecuted company that, of course, revealed lots of American policy. How do you think the discussions went on in Brussels that Stoltenberg presumably took a phone call from Blinken, while Blinken publicly says, steady on, they send in, what is it, 700 troops? Mostly what, young Italian men, Hungarian men, into Kosovo to hit ethnically Serb people there on the border?
Well, my opinion is that Western leaders and bureaucrats, like including those that you mentioned, they really don't know how to handle Kurti right now. They made this Frankenstein. They helped him become the so-called prime minister of the so-called Kosovo government. And now he is behaving really as if he is a leader of an independent state and is no longer listening to the former puppet masters, if you will. So they are becoming a little bit nervous. But essentially what you have in Kosovo, because you were mentioning these elections that were boycotted and the Albanian mayors in the northern municipalities, they claim their mandate based on the 3% of the vote that they got and so on and so forth. Essentially, what you have in Kosovo is a combination of apartheid and Palestine for all practical purposes. You have basically Serbs who live in ghettos, Serbs who are deprived of their most basic human rights, Serbian churches that are in a very, very difficult situation. Even when the so-called Kosovo court makes a certain decision when it comes to, say, the property of Serbs or Serbian churches, these decisions of the court are simply not implemented just because the beneficiaries are Serbs or Serbian church. So basically, they have no basic human rights. It's an outrageous situation for Europe of the 21st century. And now on top of all that, you have an extremist Albanian Kosovo so-called prime minister who simply wants to push them out altogether, to have Kosovo without Serbs. And that is a little too hard to digest, even for the staunchest supporters of Kosovo independence, including the Western leaders and bureaucrats that you had just mentioned.
Obviously, he'd deny being an extremist. He'd probably say he's a proud Kosovan, and his sponsors, the European Union and the United States and Britain, would say that's just not... Well, you're aware of the kind of propaganda, arguably the anti-Serb propaganda that since the 1990s has painted the Serbian community in Europe as genocidal, some might say. You might want to tell me about what you think of that propaganda. UN Security Council Resolution 1244.
I mean, come on. Sorry for just interrupting you, because what comes to my mind when you were mentioning this is, I don't know if you checked what happened earlier this week in Paris when Novak Djokovic is playing as a big tennis champion. And at the end of the match, you know, that the tennis players, they approach the camera, they say a few words in the camera, and they also write a few words on the camera. So what Novak Djokovic wrote was, Kosovo is the heart of Serbia. Please bring peace. And now he is attacked.
He's attacked in NATO nation
media. In NATO nation media, you know, because he was calling for peace. Like, I mean, that's the level of propaganda that we are talking about when it comes to Kosovo. Unfortunately, Serbs have been portrayed for the past 30 years as the sole negative actor to be blamed for every single thing. Of course, there is a part of the blame on the Serbian side for certain things that have
been
happening
over the past 30 to 50 years. Well, you're a Serbian opposition leader, so I've got to ask you, and I have to say, as regards calling for peace in Europe, you know, look what happened to China when it wants to call for peace, some might say. UN Security Council Resolution 1244, and, you know, who can answer these questions about the UN better than a former president of the UN General Assembly, permits Serbia... And this is presumably why they agreed to it, because, of course, some people in the Global South wonder how on earth Belgrade ever agreed to the kind of terms of partition that happened. But we don't want to go there. There's a lot of history there. It permits Serbia to send 1,000 people to protect Serb civilians from arguable NATO aggression. Would you say that Vucic in Belgrade should be... he said he's been sending the troops to the border. Should he be sending the 1,000 people into the area called Kosovo to protect the men, women, and children of the Serb community there?
The situation is slightly more complex because if you read the fine print, the small print, if you will, of the 1244 resolution, it actually defines the conditions under which those troops could be sent into Kosovo, and not without the agreement with NATO, with KFOR mandate. So it is not possible to just like send in the troops unilaterally.
It's debated, isn't it?
Without consultations.
There are like all UN resolutions, there are nuances to that.
Well, but like this would not be the first violation of Resolution 1244. Because the Kosovo's declaration of independence itself and the recognitions of Kosovo by a number of Western powers were a blatant violation of the Resolution 1244. So what you're referring to would not be the first violation of the Resolution 1244. But I doubt that President Vucic is going to do that. And the reason why I doubt it is that I don't have a very high opinion of his freedom to act right now and his readiness to act solely in the interest of the Serbian people in Kosovo.
Vuk Jeremic, I'll stop you there. More from the former Serbian foreign minister and president of the UN General Assembly after this break.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Western expectation was that Russia would be destabilized by extreme sanctions and the military losses. There was an expectation that Russia wouldn't be able to continue the war like longer than for a period of time, longer than probably a couple of months.
Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the former president of the UN General Assembly, Vuk Jeremic. Well, international courts, of course, have justified the unilateral recognition, as you say, to some, in violation of UN Security Council Resolution 1244 of Kosovo as a country in the first place. Of course, many in the global south, most of the world, as you know, is going to be looking at this situation where, in this region, where the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand occurred 109 years ago, I think this week, they're going to be going, this is because Aleksandar Vučić and a proportion of Serbia, the majority, some would say, do not agree with NATO policy on Ukraine. And that the sudden announcements by Blinken's appointee, Jeffrey Hovenier, the US ambassador to Kosovo, saying, look, pipe down, is they can't have a second front against Russia because they see Serbia as not properly aligned to the cause of Dejan and Joseph Borrell and the garden against the jungle.
I think that the court decision that you're referring to, when carefully read, actually supports the Serbian argument that Kosovo cannot become a state unilaterally, because it says in the decision of the court from 2010 that the statehood must be determined by the Security Council. So based on the court's view, Kosovo has never been recognized by a significant number of countries after that court's ruling.
I don't want to go too far down that line, but you were, since you were a former president of the UN General Assembly, did you ever have coffee in the corridors of the UN building in New York about this subject? Did people go from Britain, the United States and France say, you're talking nonsense? I mean, you nearly became Secretary General, of course. Maybe that was why you didn't become Secretary General, and Guterres is there.
Yeah, I was. I made it to the final, though, and then I.
But you think it's this view on Kosovo, this view on Kosovo, that stopped you becoming Secretary General of the United Nations?
It probably had to do with my strong views on Kosovo, which I never shied away from saying. But the vast majority of world countries, they see this at face value. What was done in 2008 with the unilateral declaration of independence of Kosovo and then subsequent recognition by the United States of America, the United Kingdom, and a number of other Western allies was a precedent of epic proportions. It was the very, very first time that somebody tried to create a state in the aftermath of the Second World War using those unilateral means against the will of the Security Council, against the will of the majority of the world nations. So what they realized many, many years down the road is that Kosovo cannot actually become a state without Serbia accepting it. So the only way for Kosovo to become an independent state proper, to become a member of the international community, is if Serbia actually accepts this. And that was that's the reason why the pressures on Serbia are so big, because they realize they can't. There's no other way. An alternative way would be to, you know, go to the Security Council and, you know,
and lose against China
unanimity.
And Russia.
Exactly. But then you have two permanent members of the Security Council, that is Russia and China, that have said time and again, we are going to vote.
Okay. If it's about Serbia, then what pressure can NATO, the European Union, put to destabilize Serbia? What can they do to Belgrade? I know he's your opponent, but Vučić has managed to balance things better than, I don't know whether you envy that position, whether you think you could have done better, but it's quite a position to hold in Belgrade to try and look forward to a multipolar world at the same time as anyone who looks towards a multipolar world is arguably considered a proxy of Beijing and Moscow right now.
Well, I actually think quite differently. I think that Vučić is West's best and only hope to deliver not just the independence of Kosovo, but also membership with Serbia in the NATO in the future, as well as resolution.
He would deny that. You know he would deny that. In the strongest terms, he would deny that. I mean, would you ever say this about the Nord Stream pipeline? No politician in the world is ignorant of who committed sabotage in the Baltic, but we all pretend to be imbeciles and keep silent so as not to harm the interests of our countries. Hypocrisy is everywhere. Even if this happens to the Balkan Stream, the Turk Stream, we would somehow survive, because, of course, there have been reports recently of perhaps attempts at sabotage of Turk Stream pipelines. That's not really going to endure himself to von der Leyen and Stoltenberg and Blinken and Biden, is it?
Yes, but they
That's Vucic.
Do embrace him.
On Nord Stream.
Yes, but they do. Yes, but they do embrace him. They do embrace him most warmly. They're working together very, very closely with him. He seems to be their darling in Serbia. And the reason is that the deal between the Serbian government led by Vucic and the West is the following. You can basically go and say whatever you like, but we want you to deliver. We want you to do what we tell you.
He hasn't put the sanctions on.
So basically, on the one hand, he had agreed to the completely outrageous term of the agreement between Serbia and Kosovo that would actually make sure that Kosovo becomes an independent state. And I'm referring to Brussels and Ohrid agreements done under the stewardship of the European Special Representative. Actually, one part of this agreement that Vucic had agreed to is that Serbia will not block Kosovo from joining international organizations. You remember a minute ago we were talking about how Kosovo can become a state? Well, only through a Security Council. In the Security Council, you have Russia and China, who are saying, we're going to do what Serbia asks us to do. Well, Mr. Vucic just agreed to, like, not blocking Kosovo in international organizations. So for as long as you commit to things like that, you are okay to say in your media whatever you like.
Okay, well,
so
anyway,
I mean, as you, a deal.
Well, Moscow and Beijing, you know, may have said that. They obviously, even if a future president of Serbia said that, I don't think there's any chance they would allow it. More generally, how do you think the Ukraine conflict, what it means for the Serbian people? I know I'm speaking to you from the UAE, which is a big donor to Serbia, on the level, some may say, of a future IMF level. Would you certainly say that they should be not using IMF money for development in Serbia? They should be using either UAE investment or BRICS Bank investment. Safer bet.
I don't think that the UAE is a big donor. It's certainly present financially and present economically. I don't think that there are huge donations these days coming into Serbia.
Well, it's not donations,
it's
loans.
About investments. Yes, of course, it's loans, but that's quite different, you know. And there are loans and loans and loans, and there are terms and terms and terms.
But we all know actually, about IMF loans and what happens problems. To countries.
Yeah, well, it's a long story when it comes to economics. But when it comes to this war in Ukraine, which is what you asked me, I think that the public opinion in Serbia is distinctly different from public opinions in most other European countries.
But what is it like? Because there was a big demonstration against the government, and then we saw the pictures, which were not obviously shown on European Union, arguably controlled media, of a massive support of the Serbian position, you would say, some would say, pro-Vucic position in Serbia, demonstrating the kind of unity. Is there a great unity, or is it demographically split between pro-EU neoliberalism?
We currently have big demonstrations in Serbia against the government of Aleksandar Vučić, but it has nothing to do with the foreign policy of Serbia. So I'm one of those demonstrators. My party is one of the main organizers of these rallies. And when it comes to foreign policy, I'm very, very strongly, my party is very, very strongly against Kosovo's independence. My party is very, very strongly against imposing sanctions on anybody in the world, given that experience of Serbia under sanctions.
But isn't
in
the time for unity then?
Was
dramatic. Isn't it a time for unity when the strain and stress on Belgrade has never arguably been as harsh since the bombing of the Chinese embassy of Belgrade?
I think it's overdramatic. It is not true that the pressure on Belgrade has never been higher. I was foreign minister at the time when pressures were far more higher, far more strong, around Kosovo's unilateral declaration of independence. Those days you had American Secretary of State having Kosovo and the independence of Kosovo as number one priority on her schedule. Right now, Secretary of State of the United States has quite a number of other things to deal with. So I think that when you hear from the leaders of the Serbian government, starting with Mr. Vucic, appeals for unity, I think it's a manipulation. I think it's a terrible manipulation. What we need right now is a change that would bring about the government in Serbia that is not prone for foreign blackmail, to foreign blackmail, or being pressurized into things that are against national interest.
Well, I suppose the main question then is, to a former foreign minister from that country, but also to a former president of the UN General Assembly, is which way Serbia would have voted ES114, the envoys representing most of humanity, voted not with the Americans to condemn Russia for what was happening in Ukraine. Would you have voted with the Americans?
So just for the record, because we were debating Mr. Vucic's foreign policy outlook, Serbia voted with the United States of America on that particular resolution. But the way that the people of Serbia see this war in Ukraine is essentially something very similar to what happened to us in 1999. Because in 1999, there was a foreign military intervention that was done without the agreement of the Security Council. So NATO basically bombed Serbia for about 76 days. And the result of this special military operation of NATO, if you will, in 1999, was a serious infringement of the territorial integrity of a UN member state, Serbia. So what's happening right now in Ukraine, we see as something very similar. And therefore, it kind of creates outrage in Serbia when we hear in the Western media, oh, what is happening in Ukraine is the first time since the end of the Second World War that a country is attacked and that the borders are attempted to be forcefully changed. Well, it happened to us. And we live with this to this very day. And therefore the public opinion is kind of different in Serbia from public opinions in other European countries.
Vuk Jeremic, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for the show. We'll be back on Monday with Dr. Harriet Fryad, host of the podcast Capitalism Hits Home, on the day the US was scheduled to run out of money without raising the debt limit. Until then, you can keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV, on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.